I want to welcome you. Thanks for being here today. My name is Ryan. I'm the lead pastor here at Crossroads. If you're a guest, thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for all your prayers for our family and your actions. Many of you have brought food over to us, and it has been very well received. I don't think we would have eaten over the last 4 days between sickness and grief and all that we're walking through. So thank you. I know many of you have signed up, and so thank you very much. We're walking through what everybody walks through in life, you know, no matter what we do, no matter how we live, tragedy will come find our way. But we grieve as those who have hope, right? We grieve as those, but we still grieve. So, but thank you very much. So we're going to get through this today, all right? No? You all are not helping me out. Oh my gosh. No, it's good. So, listen, if you are a guest this morning, just so you know, this past week we had a tragedy in our family. My sister-in-law passed away, 49 years old, and so we've been working through all of that and getting back in the swing of things. So if today's message is terrible, just blame the grief and move on, come back. But we were in this series called Bending Our Hearts, Bend My Heart. What is the name of the series? Bend My Heart, I think is what it's called. Bending Our Hearts, I don't know. But we're in Lent. That's what they tell me, this season leading up to Easter. And we launched this a few weeks ago, and we basically said each week we want to have just a simple prayer that we kind of install into our lives for that week to just kind of make us be a little bit more mindful of this Lenten season. And so about 3 weeks ago in our first week, our prayer was, bend my heart towards repentance so guilt doesn't break me. And this idea is if we can bend our hearts towards certain things in our lives, then the opposite of that won't destroy us, won't harm us, right? And so that was the first one. We said repentance is this gift that we have so that the weight of guilt doesn't overwhelm us. And then our founding pastor, John Smith, in week two gave us this prayer, bend my heart towards humility so that pride doesn't break me, and the power of humility versus pride in our lives. And then last week, Aaron, how many of y'all enjoyed Aaron? So yeah, so it was wonderful to have. I was super sad that I couldn't be here to just support her, but we'll have Aaron back here soon again. But she was wonderful and just kind of walked us through the power of prayer and prayer in our lives. And she gave us this prayer, bend my heart towards prayer so stress doesn't break me. So these are prayers that we can pray, that we can say throughout the Lenten season. And then we have daily reflections in our app. If you've got the app downloaded, you can turn on notifications and you'll get a notification every day as we kind of journey towards Easter. And our anchor verse for this series, if you're kind of new to Crossroads, all of our teaching series are really grounded in one piece of scripture, our sacred text that gives us some wisdom. And it's this prayer that's found in Psalm 119, 36 through 37. It's up on the screens. Y'all want to help me today? You want to participate? If you're at home, give me a thumbs up in the box there in the comment section that you're with me. But let's say this prayer together in Psalm 119, 36 through 37. What do you say? Yeah, you with me? All right, here we go. Bend my heart toward your instructions and not toward selfish gain. Turn my eyes away from worthless things. With your ways, give me life. And that's really where we're deriving these prayers. Like, how do we turn our hearts away from worthless things? Things that are not eternal. Things that really are not transformative, right? Let me ask you a question as we kind of launch into today. Have you ever noticed that our sense of smell is one of the more powerful senses that we have? Y'all ever notice that? Like, we could say this simple sentence, what's that smell? Okay? And depending upon how we say that sentence, where we put the emphasis, y'all know what's going on. So we could say, oh, what's that smell? And you immediately go, oh, we just walked in, this smells delicious. Or we could go, what's that smell? And we know, not a pleasant thing, right? Well, it's interesting, as research is done on this, like this scent, right? How we smell things. It's interesting that different scents can change our mood. Have you ever had that happen to you? Right? It's why when you walk in, how many of you all enjoy massages? Anybody like to get a massage? I hate massages. I hate it. I do not like people touching me. I have a funny story about a massage if you ever want to hear it. Sometime I'll tell you. But Okay. But like I know you walk into a place to get a massage, they've got the music going, they've got the scents, and like you're just in a better mood, right? It can lighten your mood. Different scents, they can transport us back to a distant memory. This is fascinating to me. Like, there are still like perfumes that I'll smell and it'll take me back to people that I've known along the way, that was the perfume that they wore. Or I can smell a certain cleaner and I go, and it takes me back to a place, right? Y'all ever had that experience, right? Oh, nice hat. I like that hat. Appreciate that. Just wearing the exact, they're wearing the exact same hat I am. It's a good hat. So, right? It can bring us back to a memory in our lives. And it's interesting that smells, right? Different scents, they can even help us bond with people we love, right? You can have a shared memory. You can have some experience, right? And it just brings you together. Now, my sister-in-law had a very interesting and unusual hobby. She collected Bath and Body Works anything. Okay? Now, when I say collected these fragrances, plug-ins, candles, like seriously, she collected them. Like, they knew her at Bath and Body Works. Like, the employees from Bath and Body Works came to the visitation. In her home, it was like a Bath and Body Works store. At the visitation and the funeral and the service, we gave away hundreds of candles to people. So if you look at this photo here, in the back, you see the little crates. Those are all candles. Like, one of the family members, their job was to just replenish the candles on the table, right? This is what she did. She collected. And her home was full of these fragrances, and it had a scent to it. It had a smell to it. Like, you just walked in, you smelled it. I moved those candles many times. And this was a unique thing about her. She loved it. And she would have multiples of any scent you could ever want, right? All of these candles. And as her home smelled like these fragrances, it got me thinking about our lives. And sometimes, and by the way, if there's somebody that could get me a cup of water, that would be great. I am super parched right now. I'm never going to get through this. Thank you very much. I'll take your water. I don't even care if you've drank out of it. I'm just realizing as I'm standing up here that the cold that I'm getting over is getting the best of me. I can't even swallow. Okay, here we go. As I'm thinking about like these scents in her home, right? In scripture, oftentimes our lives is given this analogy of a home, right? Our hearts, home, knock on the door, right? So you have this house. So think of your life, think of your spiritual life as a home. Well, let me ask you this question. What does your life smell like? What does your life smell like? Like, when you walk into a space, when you bring your energy, when you bring your soul into a room, what do you bring into that space with you? What is the fragrance that follows you in the room? Like, think of the Peanuts character, Pigpen, right? Right, everywhere he would go, thank you, Dennis. Everywhere he would go, there would just be the dust up around him. That's quality H2O. Thank you. Right? What scent do you bring? Do you bring a scent of joy? Do you bring a scent of humor? Do you bring a scent of compassion to your room? Do you bring a scent of anger? Do you bring a scent of fear, maybe? And depending upon your station in life, the spaces you occupy, the roles that you have, I've been around people. I worked for a person who walked into a room and just brought fear. That's all they brought with them into the room. That was the scent. I've worked with people that they walked into the room, and what they brought with them was just energy, and like, you just felt like $1 million. You felt like you could do anything. This morning, I want to talk about two powerful fragrances that fill a room when people walk into it, that fill the spaces of our lives. And I've actually been the recipient of, and my family has been the recipient of this fragrance over this week. It's interesting that this was the topic for the week. But there's two really powerful fragrances that fill a room in our lives, and we have a choice, and that is the fragrance of generosity or the fragrance of greed. Now, nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be a greedy person today. That's my goal, life goals. If I could just be greedy, if I could walk into a room and people know that is the stingiest guy I've ever met. Nobody wants that, right? So we can all agree that we want to bring generosity, right? And generosity is interesting because no matter how much money we have or how much money we don't have, each of us has a choice as to what fragrance we'll exhibit and exude in our lives when it comes to greed and generosity. Because it's greed and generosity are not matters of how much, they're matters in their ways of being and ways of seeing the world. So let's define some terms, like what is greed? Well, greed is this powerful emotion that exists, and it oftentimes will drive us to relentlessly chase after things like money or possessions or power, right? Greed often flows out of this fear of scarcity. It grows out of a fear of inadequacy, and that'll push people to accumulate more and more and more than what we actually need in our lives. Now, in moderation, the pursuit of success and financial freedom and all that stuff is very healthy, very healthy. Nothing wrong with that at all. Nothing at all. It's very good. But to an excess, when greed takes over, it can become an obsession in our lives. Now, on the flip side, let's ask the question, well, what is generosity? What is generosity? Well, generosity is this act, right, of being kind, of being selfless towards others, of giving to others, of looking around and being intentional with the use of our finances, being intentional with the use of our success, being intentional with the use of whatever power we might have, to use those things, to leverage those things, to care for and to benefit other people, right? It's a great space. It's a great, great idea of what generosity really is. We all have a measure of success. We all have a measure of financial ability. We all have a measure. And it's, do we focus that outward? Is that our intent? Now, the Gospel of John gives us a great story where we see both of these fragrances side by side, right? In John chapter 12 is just this amazing picture of Jesus, and he's having a meal. And it says in John chapter 12 that it was 6 days before the Passover, and Jesus came to Bethany. And he was there in the home of Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. Minor detail, okay? We'll pass over that one. By the way, in the Gospel of John, fun fact for Lent, in the Gospel of John, the raising of Lazarus was the beginning of the end for Jesus. So if you want to know, like, what was the pivotal point in the story of Jesus according to John that led to his crucifixion, it was the raising of Lazarus. In other Gospels, it was the turning of the temple over. But in the Gospel of John, that was a big deal. It is a big deal in anybody's world, really, you know, but at any rate, says they're there, right? It's like they've adapted to the normalcy of Lazarus back at the table, I guess, you know. So they're sitting there and they're having a meal and they have this dinner for him. And Martha is there and she's serving, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with Jesus. And Mary, says the sister of Martha, they're sisters of Lazarus, friends of Jesus, supporters of Jesus, followers of Jesus. Mary takes this pound of costly perfume, and it's made of pure nard, and she takes it and she anoints Jesus' feet, and then she wipes them with her hair. And then this is what it says. This is so cool. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. I love that. That this act that Mary did just filled the house with this amazing fragrance. And in that moment, generosity, right, something that we can't necessarily see or taste or touch, all of a sudden filled the house. That was the smell. It was this pleasant aroma. It filled the house. You can imagine, right, like an air freshener gets sprayed in a room and it fills it, and you just are brought back to a great memory, you might be. But this beautiful act of love, this beautiful act of sacrifice, of generosity, these were not wealthy people. That what it would have cost was pretty astronomical. And she breaks it over Jesus' feet. But Judas Iscariot, it says, one of the disciples, the one who was about to betray him, he was there. And he looks at this and he says, hey, wait a second. Why did we not sell this? Why did we not sell this for 300 denarii and give it to the poor? And everybody in the room was like, do you smell that? Is that you, Judas? Right? Because there's this beautiful moment and there's this fragrance of generosity. But the text says that he said this not because he cared about the poor, right? But because he was a thief, he kept the common person. He used to steal what was put into it. Now, again, just like Jesus is portrayed uniquely in all the gospel stories, Judas is a character in all the gospel stories and is portrayed uniquely. And in John, this very villainous, maniacal characterization of Judas. And in that moment, right, you have this other scent that fills the room. And everybody kind of knew it. Everybody in the room knew it. Everybody was like, come on, Judas, seriously? And here's what's interesting about greed. Greed has this smell of self-deception, right? I mean, in some ways, we can take greed and it sounds really good, but in the end, it just doesn't pass the sniff test, right? Because greed deceives us with phrases like this. Well, I worked really hard for my money, or I worked really hard to get where I am today. And greed gives us statements like, well, they're just lazy. They should have made better choices, right? Greed has this sense of being able to just self-deceive us to say, well, I deserve what I have and the abundance of what I have, and it doesn't really matter the pressing needs of our world, the pressing issues. They're not a matter of justice. It's a matter of laziness, right? And so we can deceive ourselves. In fact, one of Jesus' own parables is about the deceptive nature of greed. In Luke chapter 12, we find this parable. He's addressing a crowd, and someone has come to Jesus and said, hey, Jesus, tell my brother to give me my portion of the inheritance that I'm owed. And Jesus is confused by this, and he's like, wait a second, like, who made me your judge? Like, why am I doing this? And then Jesus says this. He says, take care, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. I love what Jesus says here. He basically says, hey, greed comes in a variety of scents. It's like Bath and Body Works for greed. Come on in. We'll get you. Here's a candle of, right? There's all these different varieties of greed in our lives, right? All these different ways that we deceive ourselves. He says all kinds of greed. I love that. There's not just one kind of greed. There's a plethora. Take your choice. Right, we all have our ways, no matter, well, I don't have enough money. We can use all our excuses, right? Regardless of what our financial circumstances are, to live a life that's self-focused, right? And Jesus basically says, listen, be on your guard against greed, because here's what happens. You think, and this world thinks, that your value is measured by the things that you have, but your value is not measured by the value of your possessions. Life is not about the abundance of your possessions. But that is the common theme that we live under. That is not anything that ended, right, with Jesus. I don't know if you know this or not, but we still live in a world that this is how we find our self-worth, is the abundance of our... Now, are possessions bad? Can we hit the pause button for a second? Are possessions bad? It's not a trick question, people. Possessions are not bad. Not at all. Not at all. The danger is when we consider the value of our lives, and even the greater danger is when we consider the value of other people's lives based on their possessions. See, that's the real danger, right? So greed forms when we believe that a person's value is based upon their net worth, the bottom line. In my own life, greed will set in when I think that my value is based on my net worth. And to help the people understand it, Jesus tells them this parable. He says, here's the deal. The land of a rich man produced abundantly. And this guy thought to himself, what should I do? I have no place to store my crops. That's a good problem to have, right? You know that abundance always produces a dilemma, right? I'll let you write that one down for a second, give you a second to think about that while I take a sip. It's not just lack that produces a dilemma. Abundance produces a dilemma. And so the guy said, well, what are my options? Well, I've got these nice barns. I could fill them, be okay. I got good land, could help out my neighbor, could give to those around. Now, you got to remember, Jesus is talking to some very, very impoverished people. I mean, the wealth gap in the first century in Palestine is massive. And so he's talking to peasants, and they have nothing, and the options were apparent. Like, we could feed the town, we could help people. But what does he do, right? He looks at his options, and he goes, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I will tear down my perfectly good barns, and I'll build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. That's what I'm going to do. Now, here's the thing. I love this. Having barns is not a sign of greed. Okay? not a sign of greed if you got barns. This guy had barns. No problem. Fill them. That's what they're there for. That's not the issue. It's always needing bigger and bigger barns when nobody else has barns. That's the problem, right? That's what Jesus is addressing in a world where there's a continual gap and there's oppression of the poor and the impoverished. And so this guy says, I'm going to tear down my barns. I'll build bigger barns. And then I will say to my soul, soul, how many of you talk to yourself this way? Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. Good job, soul. But God said to him, you fool, this night your very life is demanded of you. And the things you've prepared, whose will they be? In other words, you missed the joy of blessing others. You missed the joy of being able to care for others. You missed the joy of being able to be the hero in the story. And Jesus says, so it is with those who store up treasures for themselves but are not rich toward God. You know what I read in this? That you can do both. You can have a measure of storage and treasures, and there's wisdom, and we see this in our sacred text. We see this in life. There's all kinds of wisdom in that. And you can also be rich toward God. And if you don't like the word God, I get it, because this topic has been used to manipulate people to give and to give irresponsibly, all that stuff. So change the word to love, okay? So change the word to love. So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves but are not rich towards love. What is this? It's not just short-sighted, it's self-sighted management of resources, right? Self-sighted management of resources is in itself a form of spiritual poverty, right? It's having all the possessions we want, all the things we could ever dream of, but still being poor in our understanding of the value of life and the power of love. And so if we take all this and Jesus' teaching, we go back to John 12, there's the woman with the perfume and there's this beautiful fragrance, and then, you know, Judas, it's like, whoa, where did that come from, Judas? And Jesus says this, he says, leave her alone. She brought it so that she might keep it for the day of my burial. That's why she bought it. She had a plan in mind. It was an intended act of giving. That this was its purpose. And you're wanting to derive some, the purpose for her to have this in her life was not to put it on herself. The purpose, why she was given the resources, why she bought it, was for my burial. And then he makes this statement that's always been perplexing. He says, you'll always have the poor with you, but you do not always have me. You know how I take this? I take it, he looks over at Judas and he's like, you will always have the poor with you, right? And why will you always have the poor with you? Because you just want more and more and more and more and more. So you'll always have the poor with you. It's a fact of the reality of the human condition. But now at this moment, right, this is the time. And she knew it and she acted in that way. And so you have two competing fragrances in the room this day. You have generosity and you have greed. One would bring freedom to Mary. One would turn her into the hero. We would stand thousands of years later, talk about this story. And one would bring death. One would bring death. And so we're always faced with this choice. And so this prayer is one that we should put into our lives and we should pray beyond the Lenten season. And this prayer just simply says, bend my heart towards generosity so that greed does not break me. Bend my heart towards generosity, God, so that greed doesn't break me. And this prayer, I think, is super important for all of us sitting in the room, tuning in online, because no matter whether we want to believe it or not, every person sitting in this room, every person watching this, you are in the top, let's be generous, you're in the top 10% of the wealthiest of the world. Probably 5%. Some of us are in the top 2, 3% in the world. And it's really easy for us. It's really easy for us in our privilege to get isolated and to forget that. And as peacemakers, we're called to live with eyes open. And so this prayer is super important for those of us that live in that space. And again, this is not a guilt trip, okay? It's not a guilt trip. I'm not driving the guilt trip here. I love nice stuff. I love nice stuff. I love nice stuff. But that's why I have to pray this prayer a lot. A lot. So in your everyday normal life, how do we live this out? Well, I want to encourage you. I hope you know my heart. I hope you know that my job is not, this. I know this is going to sound funny, but my job is not necessarily to grow the bottom line of Crossroads Church, the organization. That's not my job. My job is to be, hopefully, some sort of a spiritual guide that we walk together, right? I'm not perfect, but for your growth, okay? So I hope you hear this. And I love to talk about these things because I love to give. I haven't always loved to give, but that's something that has grown in our lives. And so I try to model this. But here's what I want to encourage you with, to live this out in our everyday normal lives, right? Now, and I'd like to say this. I'm not talking about making budget today, okay? We're actually making budget. How's that? How do you like them apples? Don't clap. The budget's a deficit budget, okay? Don't be clapping like we're out of the woods, okay? But I just want you to know we're making budget, okay? And I want you to know that this is a generous place and you are generous people. So it makes it easier to talk about this, okay? So no guilt trips here, none of that nonsense. I'm not telling you to go get your grandmother's ring and sell it so we can, you know, whatever. None of that, okay? I want you to, as your pastor, I want you to live a responsible and radically generous life, okay? A responsible and radically generous life. Now, what does that mean? Okay, let's start with responsibility, okay? Number one, you gotta take care of your needs and your family's needs financially, okay? If anybody ever tells you to give until you can't eat, change the channel, okay? Like, this isn't slot machine, God, heaven, anything like that, okay? Like, pay your bills. Pay your bills. So can somebody say amen to that? Like, I don't, like, it's okay. Like, you might say, well, I haven't been living generously and I want to give and that's wonderful. Don't, okay? Sometimes we got to grow into these things, all right? The best thing we can learn to do is manage our finances wisely, right? Manage our finances wisely. So you have to be responsible. So people say give till it hurts, all that stuff. And there is some truth to that. I don't have any issues with it. But we have to be responsible with our giving. Now, sometimes we've been irresponsible with our spending, okay? And so we have to get responsible with our finances so that we can become radically generous people. So what does radical generosity look like? Just my humble opinion. Radical generosity is the intentional choice to live with less luxury to meet the needs of others, okay? So let's just start with that. So I'm living with less. Oh, thank you, Roland. I appreciate that. More quality H2O, right? He could tell I could hardly swallow. Okay, so radical generosity is a choice that I live with less luxury in my life to meet the needs of others in one sense. So I make an intentional choice, right, to look for how I can support the good work of justice and mercy in our world and things around me. And so here's what I want to encourage you to do. Be intentional and give to what you value, okay? Give to what you value. Now, this might be different than what you've heard in church before because I'm not opposed to things that maybe you've heard said. I just want to be really honoring that it can be very easy to slip into spiritual manipulation when we're talking about giving, okay? And I don't want to do that. And so I want you to hear my heart. And this is my heart. This is what I tell my own children, okay? I tell my children this, and they're still under a little bit of my authority. It's more influence now, but there's still a little authority. So what we've raised our kids is, and I'm going to talk about this again, but we've raised our kids with this idea of you can't be a jerk. Right? I mean, that seems to me a really good goal of a spiritual life, right? So I've raised my kids and said, I don't really care what church you go to, what you believe about God. Just don't be a jerk, right? You be a loving person. And part of that means you can't spend everything that the universe hands to you on yourself. That's just greedy. And so we've always lived and tried to help them understand this principle of a minimum of 10%. And so they would get their money from like work, and they would set aside so much for savings, and they would set aside so much for a giving account, and then they would set aside And then they could do whatever they want with the rest of it, right? And as much to my chagrin, a lot of the times the stuff that they would do with what they could do with, I was like, what are you doing with what you can do? It's crazy. It's like, stop it. Stop buying that junk. But it's theirs, you know, so whatever. And so they've always had this principle. Now, I've never said to our kids, you have to give it to church. Never have said that to them. Because I think the principle is what's important for our lives, for our spiritual growth. And I'm proud to say that our kids at you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, one of our kids had a friend who was went to the hospital and had a surgery and said, Dad, can I use some of my giving money to help them with their medical expenses? So I said, absolutely. And they said, bills are expensive. How about I give them $500? It's like, whatever you want to do. And I thought that was totally cool that, you know, that my kid saw that and wanted to do that and was able to help. And so I want you to hear my heart in this principle that for your life, I want the joy of generosity, okay? That's the first thing. As the, like, leader of Crossroads Church, I want us to be healthy financially. That's second, okay? So this idea is, so give to what you value, but give in an intentional way. So set aside a percentage of your income and give it away to three areas that this is how we think about it. Now, need, and next. Now, need, and next. Now, as a person who my faith is very important to me, for 25 years of my life, we have set aside 10% and given to church because that's important to me. I value that. You might not. Okay, fair enough. I just want you to hear me, okay? In your life, give to what you value. And if your spiritual life and your community of faith is of value to you, then I encourage you to give here. If you're in a space where you're not sure, then don't. But I want to encourage you to still live the principle because the principle is true and real. It's a spiritual law, in my opinion. Now, I do think 10% is a good place to start. I think it's a good principle. It's been around for a long time. So that's what I live into, right? Now, here's the thing. As you do this, you cannot think yourself into generosity. It's impossible. You can't sit there and think, I'm going to be a generous person, I'm going to be a generous person, I'm going to be a generous person, and wake up the next day and be a generous person. You can't do it. It is impossible. You have to take action. Okay? You have to take action. At some point, you just have to do it. Now, please put all this together, okay? Responsible. You might say, well, Ryan, I've been given 10%. That's awesome. Then I would encourage you to give more. I mean, we try to grow every year. Our family does. Think about it this way. If I was giving 10% 25 years ago and today I was still just giving 10%, have I grown spiritually? Have I grown in generosity at all? That it's not a trick question. You just don't want to answer it because some of you are like, oh, crap. The law is always easier than the spirit of the law, right? So listen, here's the deal. I want to encourage you because I want you to have the joy of it. And I mean this from the bottom of my heart. Please don't hear this as a fundraising pitch for Crossroads Church. Please don't hear that. I really do believe if we love people and we do what we're supposed to do, somehow in the end, we're going to be okay. So please don't hear that. Please hear this as a way that your life can be a beautiful fragrance to the world around you. And you can live in this joy. And I can tell you there is nothing, nothing more exhilarating than feeling like I've been a good steward and I've been able to help somebody that I couldn't have helped had I put too much strain on my personal finances or had I lived to the max or had I always had to get a bigger fishbowl, whatever it might be. And so I want to encourage you to take some action in your life. Because at the end of the day, if we become generous people as individuals and as a church, one of our values is generosity. Like our Pieces Worth It fund this year, 50% is basically we're giving it away. 50% goes into Partners in Hope, which distributes out and does programs in the community and around the world. 50%, another percent of it is going to set up a benevolence fund where we've already been able to help. We helped a couple in our church get into an apartment. They were struggling financially. You all were able to do that because you gave. We want to just grow that. We invested in our kids. Like, so the joy of that. But you got to take action. Because generosity, at the end of the day, unleashes the power of love in our world. And if you're a faith person like me, you could say, and maybe this is how you want to fill it in, generosity unleashes the power of God in our world. I do believe that. But even maybe more importantly, and maybe the most important fill-in on the whole page today, some of you have never looked at the fill-ins, you just looked at it right now. You're like, wow, he's never said that in 5 years. I don't know how to break the power of greed in this world and in my own life any other way than through generosity. And greed is so dangerous, and it's so powerful, and it's so destructive. In a September 2023 article called "The Deadly Consequences of Greed, An Unhappy Life and an Early Death," it says that greed can trigger chronic stress and anxiety in our lives. It results in loneliness and isolation. It creates a constant lack of unfulfillment, a constant lack of fulfillment in our lives. It creates an emptiness inside of us. The stress associated with greed takes severe tolls on our physical and our mental health. High blood pressure, heart problems, depression, health issues. These are not uncommon things against the people who are driven solely by greed. And greed always starts as like that little smell, like, what is that? You know, about... it was maybe 15 years ago, we were living in this house that was owned by a church, and we walked in one day and we were like, that something doesn't smell right, that's weird. And then over the course of about 3 or 4 weeks, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. We were like, what is that smell? And then finally we're like, oh my God, you're walking in, it's terrible. The heat would kick on and it was like, oh my gosh, what is going on? We couldn't figure out what it was. We looked everywhere. And then like we're down on the ground and I'm trying, you know, it's like nobody ever wants to like, smell this and tell me if it's bad. Like nobody wants to experience that in their life. But I'm sniffing everywhere. And I get down and like under where the like, there was like a pantry, I think. There was like a little heater box under there. And I got down there and it kicked on when I was down there. And rush air and I'm, you know, and I was like, there it is. And I pulled it out, and there was a decomposed dead mouse inside of the heater. Talk about bad luck. But that's what greed does, right? It starts off real small, and then the heat kicks up, and it just gets smellier and smellier and smellier and smellier. And here's the dangerous thing about the sense of smell and greed in our lives. Y'all know that your brain is wired in such a way that it will shut off a sense of smell after about 6 minutes. Did you know this? So like if you're in a situation, a real overwhelming smell, at some point in time, you will not know it's there. And then if you leave the room and come back in, you'll smell it because your brain is wired to not have to deal with that nonsense. Did y'all ever have a dorm room, share a dorm room? You woke up in the morning, you left for class, everything was fine. You walk back in, you're like, what is wrong with this room? Like nothing happened in that time. Your brain had shut up. That's what happens with greed. We just get used to it. But here's the thing. On the flip side, there was another article in November of 2023 that came out. Is generosity good for your health? And Columbia doctor Kelly Harding, she said this. We humans, we're innately social creatures, and our brains are constantly mirroring one another's emotions. And when it comes to giving, she wrote, we're hardwired for reciprocity. Even a small gift like a cookie activates our desire to respond in kind. And what's so lovely about giving is your kindness can inspire others to be kind too. And generosity impacts our health and our well-being in so many positive ways. It boosts moods. It gives higher self-esteem. Our immune system is stronger. It helps reduce stress and anxiety and blood pressure. It's funny to me how one of the wealthiest nations in the world has the highest rate of heart disease and the highest rate. Why is that? The associated feel-good chemicals, she says, can help reduce aches and pains and even help us sleep better. I've lost sleep over a lot of things about money, but I've never lost sleep over the money I've given away. Never. Never. So I want to invite you to stand this morning as we have communion together. I'm going to get a big old cup of grape juice. Sorry, that was sacrilegious. I shouldn't have said that. Blame the grief. We're going to have communion together. This is an open table. Everyone is welcome. There's no rules. There's no beliefs. There just is love. We're swimming in it. And this is an opportunity to be reminded that the very essence of the nature of the universe is love. And as Christians, we say that that love is most demonstrated and seen in the death of Jesus, his body broken for you, his blood shed for you and all 8 billion people on the planet. And so as you receive this today, be reminded that generosity is at the core of what we call God. For God so loved the world that God gave God's only son. And that metaphor reminds us that this universe accelerates and spins and is created all around generosity, redemption, joy, it's built into it. And that's my heart for you and for us as a church. The body of Christ broken for you, the blood of Christ shed for you. As we sing this song, you're welcome to the table to come. Spend a few moments praying, considering what action steps you can take to let your life be a fragrance of generosity.